real estate investing is awesome. It's just like life, things come up and you have to adapt in order to survive or come out even stronger.
You're listening to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the number one resource for active duty veterans and their families who want to learn how to build real wealth through real estate investing. Each week, we sit down with top military real estate investors, industry experts, and leaders who share their secrets to success in the real estate game. Now,
get off your ass,
get motivated, and take action to make your financial freedom dreams a reality.
Before we get started with today's show, I have to let my faithful ADPI podcast family in on a little secret. For the past year, we've been hard at work trying to consolidate all of our epic resources into one community-based platform to damn near guarantee our member success. I'm proud to announce the launch of ADPI Campus, our off-Facebook, all-in-one platform dedicated to helping the military community own more of the land they swore to protect and defend. From networking to live workshops to courses, masterminds, cohorts, and even one-on-one coaching, ADPI Campus is the community for military real estate investors worldwide. Sign up for your free trial of ADPI Campus at www.adpicampus.com, where you'll get complete access to our brand new bootcamp mini course and our exclusive deal room where you can list, connect, buy, and sell deals alongside other military real estate investors. That's www.adpicampus.com to sign up now for free. Do it now before it's too late. Now, let's start the show. Hey, what's going on, ADPI Nation? Kevin Brenner here, host of the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. And today, as in all days, I'm very excited to bring on our special guest, Anthony. Man, Anthony's got some amazing stuff here. But Anthony Ritchie, he's an Active Duty Navy Chief Petty Officer. So shout out to the Tim Kellys of the world who was a Chief Petty Officer when he got out. But Anthony is still doing it, and he's also an active real estate investor. And we're going to talk about something very new, very exciting, a little twist on the Burr method. And I don't know, I'm going to give this credit to Anthony because he said it to me. So all the credit due to Anthony, the Burr in B. Trademarked is Anthony's, not mine. We're going to be talking about this, how to kind of turn, you know, a traditional Burr into this Airbnb model and what Anthony did. We're going to run through the numbers on it. And then, you know, obviously we're going to hit his story. And we're also going to talk about, you know, the beginnings of how Anthony got started just as a single E5 and got started in real estate. And you know, I think there's a lot of folks out there. So if you're listening right now, and you're looking to get started, but you're junior enlisted and you're thinking, oh God, I can't do this. I don't have money. It's impossible. Nah, you need to tune in, listen up. If you're driving, keep driving, be safe. If you're at the gym, turn this up. If you know other, you know, other folks who have expressed interest who are junior enlisted and want to get into this game, screenshot this podcast and text it to them. That's all you have to do. But for our live audience, let's kick it right now. Anthony, man, welcome to the show. And as always, I want to hear your story. I want to hear how you got started. So can you just give me a quick breakdown on your military history and then how you kind of got into real estate?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I'm really blessed to really be up here. I think my story is no different than, as far as the beginning of my story is no different than the average sailor, but it's just the decisions that I decided to make throughout that process. So I don't want anybody to think that this is something that's extraordinary. It could be done by any sailor that's getting a paycheck on the 1st or the 15th, or any military person that's getting a paycheck on the 1st or 15th. It is possible. So it kind of started with me being an E5, and I felt like I know I was living above my means. I was using my credit card to take care of certain transactions. And I didn't like the fact that I felt like I got paid too much to live paycheck to paycheck or just to pay my bills. And so when I got stationed in Los Angeles, because I started off my career in Norfolk, was on a DDG 103, that's Truxton. So shout out to everybody that Plank owned and commissioned that ship back in 09. Got stationed over at NRD Los Angeles. And, you know, in LA, you see a lot of affluent people, right? You see people with these nice cars. And the first question that comes to my mind is, how are they able to afford this? What are these jobs? Because me being raised most of my life in North Carolina, Virginia, I know city workers, you know, policemen, firefighters, teachers. You know, that's the majority of the people that I know make a living in life, and obviously military. But these other sources of income to me was just very, you know, foreign. So started asking around, and I realized that people were getting money from owning land, parking garages, right? Anybody lives in a metropolitan area, they know owning a parking garage or just a parking lot, how much money that provides. Something that seems so simple, right? But has a lot of cash flow. It's just concrete and white paint. So I got my mind wrapped around the fact that, okay, this is how I can make more money, but I wasn't financially ready and my financial literacy wasn't where it needed to be. So I started searching, right? YouTube University. And that's how I was able to find Dave Ramsey and get, do the debt snowball. And so that took me several years and some adjustment with my family, right? Because you got to talk to your spouse. This is not something that you do on your own if you have a partner in life. Hey, look, we got to make some changes. Got to sell a car. Got to cut the cable, but write it out and show that this was a monthly progress. And I did a little twist to it. Every 3 months, we would treat ourselves. So every 3 months, we would say, hey, let's go to Disneyland. It was, 30 minutes down the road, or let's go to a nice restaurant. That way we keep our sanity and it's a little treat to ourselves in order to make the process not seem like such torture, because a lot of people, it's going to take them 2, 3, 4, 5 years to pay off debt. And, if you leave it up to some people, they'll kind of go cold turkey and they're like stir crazy. And it's hard to transition out of that scarcity mindset, because now most people are like, all right, pay off debt. I want to, just not live paycheck to paycheck. It's hard to flip the switch and now think of a abundance mindset because you've been on a scarcity mindset. So that was something I wanted to keep in check, because I didn't want to be just the individual that's always squirreling money. And then when it's time to invest, I'm now scared and my risk tolerance is not where it needs to be. So learn financial literacy first. Then I waited until it was the right time to buy property. I ended up using a VA loan to buy a triplex in Portsmouth, Virginia. For those that don't know, that's a Hampton Roads, Virginia area. It's right by the shipyard, actually about 3 minutes from the shipyard. I ended up buying that for $139,000. It was appraised for $145,000. So nice. Anybody that knows, so the reason why I talk about what it was appraised for and what I bought it for is because anybody that's bought a rental property, more than likely, most people that buy use their VA loan to buy a turnkey property. You don't usually have these issues, but the appraisal is very strict. They nit and pick on a lot of things, and they were nit and picking on me on the standalone garage that had nothing to do with anybody that lived inside the rest of the house. The standalone garage was gutted. No, wasn't for anybody but rats. So they were telling me that the roof was, roof wasn't passing appraisal. So what I did was I used the equity between the 139 and the 145. I used that $6,000 difference to pay the contractor to pay for the roof at closing. So me and my real estate agent did that. I believe the term is called concessions. And that's what we were able to do so that it didn't stop that's me creative. From being able to purchase the property, because we were really at a standstill with that. So I don't know. I'm pretty sure not too many people know about it, because I think certain states are not allowed to do it. But in Virginia, my real estate agent and I pulled it off. And the reason why I was educated on that was because my real estate agent was also an investor. So definitely keep in mind.
Just going to say that. Yeah. I was just going to say, you have to. That's the power of working with someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yes.
Work with an investor-friendly realtor, because I'll tell you what. I mean, I literally just wrote a blog today for Real Trends, which is the top. It's the people that, those lists that come out, they're like, the top, 100 producing real estate agents, they're the ones who collect all this data. So Tom Ferry, the top realtor, all that stuff, he owns Real Trends. Long story short, I wrote a blog for them specifically talking about how most real estate agents aren't investor. They don't have that investor mindset, but they pretend that they do. And the best way, the number one way, in my opinion, Anthony, and I'm curious what you think about this. If your realtor does not have investment properties themselves, I find a new realtor. If from an investor standpoint, that's the quickest way. You can find out in 2 seconds and just say hey, how many investment properties do you have? And if they say, no, I just work with investors, then nah.
I think that's a good test. Unless, I'm not sure how you could check this, but they're like, hey, I've been working with investors for 30 years. So I don't know how you could check that, but maybe that's a gamble.
Yeah, but if they were, they'd have investment property.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because I tried to get my real estate license in California, and the broker that was teaching me, through my course, he was telling me that's the biggest problem he was having with these successful real estate agents was getting them to buy properties. I don't know what it is. They're just so stuck on, selling a home or buying a home for their customer versus actually getting in the game and seeing, you know, they see how much these homes are worth and what people are, you know, renting them out for. And now short-term rentals as well, what people are getting for that. So, you know, hey, to each his own. But yes, having a real estate agent that is an investor themselves is a key contributor to your success, because that actually was the biggest difference between my first deal and my second deal. My second deal, I didn't have a real estate agent that was involved in real estate investing. And it showed from me trying to ratify my contract. It showed with me trying to, with my offers. It showed even when I was trying to get an Estepol agreement with the tenant and trying to also receive rent and security deposits at closing as well. A lot of that stuff that she wasn't too familiar with.
Yeah. And guys, if you're listening to this podcast right now, whether you're watching it live or listening live or simply listening to it, over regular channels, if you're looking for an investor-friendly realtor, lo and behold, Active Duty Passive Income has a nationwide network of investor-friendly realtors all around the country. And we're stacking them up and we're training them and we're making sure that they know and we're making sure that they're investors themselves and they're military connected. So if you want to get connected with that, just swing over to activedutypassiveincome.com/resources to get that figured out. We'll get you connected ASAP. But Anthony, man, yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, having someone in your corner who knows what they're talking about is important. And I love the fact that you were creative on this triplex deal and you were able to use that. I call it instant equity, you know, you go in, you buy something at a good rate and then boom, it appraises for a little higher. And here we go. You know, you got some instant equity, but you were able to go and convert that to get things fixed, to bring the property home and get it closing. So you're buying this triplex with your VA. Obviously you're having to live in this unit. This was your first deal.
Yes.
And you were still an E5 at the time?
At that time it was E6. By then E6. I was first class.
Okay. So you kind of discovered real estate out in LA as far as like a, hey, how do I make money situation? And you did your education, then PCS to Virginia, and that's where you got into the game.
Yes.
Awesome. So you're there now, you have this triplex, and what are some, you know, kind of challenges that you faced with your first deal? Because I know there's a litany of challenges that everyone faces, but putting them out in the open is something that I think will help other people in your shoes avoid some of those pitfalls.
Okay, so we'll start off with the neighborhood. Understand what type of class building or property that you're purchasing. So I give this place a C-. So great cash flow, but obviously the quality of tenants is going to be challenging. So I inherited two out of the three because one had to go because I had to live in it. Mm-hmm. And right off the jump, everything was good. And I hired a property manager as well too, but I was still involved because this is my first property. So I want to be very involved. So I've realized that you have to train your residents what your expectations are at the beginning. And even that can be done even when you have a property manager, and your property manager has to facilitate those rules and regulations and what you want them to, a standard that you want them to have early. Now, the problem that I have was my property manager was not properly facilitating those standards. And so I tell my property manager, hey, this is how I want things to go from the get-go. He's telling them, hey, don't worry about that. So case in point.
wait. You were telling them like, it's like, yeah, I need you to take the trash out the back. The property manager's behind going, chill, man. Just keep it in the house. It's fine.
And look, I'll give you a good example. One of the ladies was ending her lease. And the idea is that obviously I have to inspect her apartment before I provide her security deposit.
Right. Like a closeout inspection. Yeah.
Yes. So I told him, I said, hey, because I heard from somebody else that he has a habit of releasing security deposits to the tenants when they move versus inspecting. He just gives it straight to them. And so I told him, hey, look, do not do that, please. You know, we need to inspect it. Give us 45 days and then we'll disperse whatever's left. Now, the thing was, she owed a month of rent. So the security deposit was going to be given to me anyways. So told him, hey, don't do it. And he pretty much gave me an email like, I'm going to do this anyways. And so I physically talked to the tenant, like, hey, on the way out the door, hey, look, just to make things very clear, you're not going to get your security deposit because now, you know, you haven't paid the last month's rent, which is equal to what her rent is, you know, one month's rent is. So she was like, oh, I find that crazy, you know, because you know, Mike told me that I was going to get it. I was like, well, no, that's not how it works. You know, I have to inspect. And also, yeah, you owe a month of rent. So apparently he was doing that around town to people. I don't know why. Very unprofessional. But for starters, vet your property manager. Definitely get a lot of referrals. The crazy thing about it is that his business actually got like the best business award in the city. So I was like, I thought I was good. And it come to find out it's not. And I found out how he does business on a positive side and negative side, because his attorney that he closes properties with was actually my lawyer for my operational agreement for my properties and for my LLC. So That's how I was able to kind of put two and two together as far as how he was doing business on one side and how he was doing business on the other, and how to best kind of beat him ahead of that. Because he was doing it underneath people's noses, and then you're like, hey, where's the security deposit? Oh, I already gave it. And the person's, you know, nowhere to be found. Next thing you know, you're trying to do a garnishment.
Place is crashed or something like that.
Yeah. So property manager putting a standard out for your tenants very early. So there's no, whoa, where did this come from? I didn't know that I couldn't grill outside, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, totally. I think I went through a similar thing with hiring and firing multiple property managers from a distance, hiring and firing contractors from a distance. And I found out, you touched on it briefly, the number one way to find out if your property manager, your contractor, or whatever vendor is good is go, and when you're interviewing them, obviously ask them the interview questions, right? But also ask for referrals. Say, hey, can I talk to a couple clients that you've worked with in the past? And I'd like their name, phone number, and email. And usually if they're worth their salt, they're going to list like, oh, how many do you need? 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
And I ask for a minimum of 3 and like around 5 is what I look for. And I will then, when I get off the phone with them, I call these people, and I don't email them. I call them, and and I talk with them, and I say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about going with this guy. What do you think? And my property manager, latest one I have now, in Savannah, I got people who have three homes, so people who have over 50 units with them, and they're like, they're fantastic. You know, they're awesome. Not the cheapest, but you're going to pay, you know, but, and that's that, I was fine with that. So that to me was a winner. So get those referrals, because they're crucial.
Yeah, they are.
So, you know, we kind of talked about some brief pitfalls and some challenges there. At what point did you go and kind of figure like, okay, well, I'm in this unit, I'm in this triplex. And were you cash flowing with that triplex?
Yeah. So, and that's the reason why, like, I have been had the utmost patience with that particular property, because the mortgage is $950 when I got it. Thanks to property tax went up. So it's like $990 now. But at the time, $950, and the total rent was $2,300 at the time.
Oh, wow. So you're cash flowing. Yeah. So even with your variable expenses and stuff, you're probably still cash flowing $500-$600.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Each unit was cash flowing $233 at the time.
That's good. Yeah. So you're talking north of $200 a door, which is a great metric to look at. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that makes it a little bit easier to swallow, like you were saying.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like the general incompetence. Mm-hmm. It would still bother me, but, you know, like, hey, I'm still cash flowing. So what was the next move for you, Anthony?
So the next move was, this was actually a joint deal between my wife and I. We put down $41K on a duplex in Norfolk. And this is the property that I said that I got where the real estate agent wasn't a real estate investor herself. Mm-hmm. So definitely some bruise and bumps along the way, but got the duplex. And the plan was to renovate the inside, build, add value, and then exit out in a couple of years. Which is exactly what we did. So we put down the money onto it, renovated the left side. So unit 2, we renovated that one. We got both units filled up. And right when I got people in there, COVID happened. So yeah, COVID. Yeah, 2020, March of 2020. So yeah, November, bought in November 2019, renovated it out. March, got people in there because everybody's getting their income tax, right? So everybody's got the money to put down security deposit plus first month's rent. And then boom, COVID. So then that's when things got a bit challenging. But what we did was I converted, because at the time, 5 units. So I converted about 60% of my tenants to rental relief programs very quickly, because I realized that, you know, it's very unreasonable for landlords, especially small town landlords, to pay the mortgage of their rental properties for over a year, which is pretty much how long the rent moratorium ended up going on for. Mm-hmm. So got real personable with my tenants, like, hey, look, tell me what's up. You know, let's keep this door of communication open, because what I don't want to happen is I don't want a whole month to go by and you're not saying anything to me. Let's keep comms open. And so that's what I did with my tenants. Obviously, there was definitely some headaches, because I did have to evict one of the individuals, but 90% of the time I was able to talk to that person and get them on a program and make sure that we didn't skip a beat. So I talked to my wife and I about it a lot. And this was definitely trial by fire, because now she's not on me as much. I've definitely proven to her, hey, look, if I can get through COVID, I can get through anything. So if the fact that we were able to cash flow in the midst of COVID by getting right. creative and accessing the money that was provided federally through nonprofit organizations or through the city based off of what, you know, whatever city you're in, mm-hmm. was definitely a relief, and a relief for the tenants as well. They want you to feel like you care. All right. So it's not just a money grab for you, that you actually care about not putting on the street. And obviously you don't want, it's a hassle and financial hassle and time hassle to do tenant turnover anyways. So might as well keep the people that's in there for continuity. And then also, since you already have a rapport, put them on a program, get them through COVID until they get their jobs back, and then we'll go from there. So I use that as an opportunity for them to show me, because the idea is that they're supposed to be trying to get a job. So we would set them up for a program. Hey, look, 6 months, rent's paid for. That program would give me 6 months worth of rent lump sum. Boom. Hey, you're good for 6 months. Hey, you got 6 months to try to get a job. By that end of the 6 months, your actual lease is up. If you haven't gotten a job, I will not renew with you. That way we're all on the same page. It's on you as an adult to actively try. And I helped you out. I try to help you out, but I'm also running a business. So you'll get your 60-day notice, 90 to 60-day notice, and then I'll move on.
Yeah. And I was just going to ask kind of what the creative structure of the program looked like. I did something similar, I think, if I'm remembering, a very similar situation. In fact, I was renovating a quadplex, and we were just getting ready to put tenants in, and COVID happened. Like, we were renovating in like February of 2020, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes like a month to put a tenant in there to get the advertising up, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I think we had to, the market rent prior to COVID there was like $1,200 for that unit. And it ended up, I think we rented it out for like $930. Like, we took a 22% because it just, the market just, you know, yeah. First of all, no one was moving, right? Yes. And, because people didn't want to get sick, they didn't know, like, and even storage facilities weren't open. They couldn't get boxes. They couldn't get anything. And then on top of that, it just the rental market kind of took a massive dip. So it's one of those things that, you know, we say you can underwrite a property, right? And you could try to, you know, hope yeah. for the best, or plan as much as you can, but there's some things that you can't really do. And that's why we always say, make sure you, make sure you're investing for cash flow and you're not banking on appreciation, because like this can happen and you just never know. I mean, we did the, what was it called, Anthony? In the CARES Act, it was where they freeze your mortgage for 6 months.
Oh, and the deferment?
Yeah, that's what I did for one of my properties. I did the deferment and I deferred payments for 6 months because we had this massive debt on the rehabs that we just had done mm-hmm. up. And we only had, I think, two people living in the quadplex, but it was a blessing because I went in, I did that. I restructured with my partners and said, hey, you know, let's restructure this balloon payment that I owe you because of, you know, who the heck predicted COVID, you know, like,
yes, yes.
And they were cool with it because like they, you know, so now they're in it for the long haul. And we came out of that restructure. We paid each month, just not as much as we would, like our full mortgage. We paid mm-hmm. like half mortgage for 6 months, but we didn't get dinged on our credit. We didn't get dinged on, you know, we didn't get fees or anything like that, which was great. And then we're able to go and adapt and overcome on that situation, come out the backside. Now we're renting it for $1,200-$1,300 a month for each unit. So it took some time, but having that ability to be agile and be real with your tenants is super important, because you could have just ghosted them and yes. they probably would have ghosted you.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They probably wouldn't pay rent, and you'd be in a much tougher place. Did you did you have a property manager at this time, or had you fired that other guy, or were you self-managing?
I fired the other guy and I hired somebody else, but I basically was doing his job for him because I needed a sense of urgency.
Right.
And so I pretty much was like, hey, we're obviously, I'm still paying you my $99 per unit because, you know, you're going to collect the rent and pretty much collect the rent and make sure you send out a contractor if something work needs to get done. But I'm going to facilitate the communications with the tenants. Because
you were kind of handling that side of it.
Yeah. It wasn't happening quick enough, or even better, there was not enough creativity in how can we make sure everybody gets paid. And I get it. I'm not going to say that's not their job. I feel like that's part of the property manager's job, but maybe not to the extent that I was willing to go. You know, I'm physically going over their house, knocking on the door, having a conversation, trying to figure out their woes, and then we try to figure out where to go from there.
And that stuff is, it's priceless. I mean, it's, you know, we say it all the time, but real estate investing or any type of investing is all about creating a solution. And people have problems, and, you know, you have to understand that you're, like you said, you're running a business, but you also have to be human and have to be able to, willing to, you know, provide a solution and provide an option, because tenants know that they're not going to get that from most landlords, and it's going to want to make them stay, and it's going to want to make them, you know, be loyal, especially if you're providing nice quality housing. Hey guys, Kevin here, and I wanted to interrupt this week's podcast episode with just kind of a public service announcement. I don't know if you guys know this, but we have this thing called the cohort, and we have one for commercial real estate and one for residential real estate. But the cohorts have been a smashing success as we launched them in 2023 and moving into 2024. We literally have like a wait list going right now. But if you're interested in learning how to do real estate investing alongside other like-minded, super focused people in the military community, like in our community, then you're going to want to sign up for the cohort. And the way we have it set up and that we're moving this direction with a residential cohort and a commercial cohort is the residential is going to focus on everything 1 to 4 units, whether that's buy and hold or BRRRR or short-term rentals and Airbnbs or like all of that stuff is in the residential side. And then your commercial real estate one, which is super powerful, is going to be focused on those large commercial 7-figure apartment buildings, mobile home parks, RV parks, things like that, that you thought you could never get involved in. But now with our brand new education on ADPI campus, which you guys know about, and combine that with our cohort and our coaches and everything coming together, it's becoming a very, very, very powerful tool. So if you're interested in getting involved with this, what you need to do is go into ADPI Campus, log into ADPI Campus. And if you don't have it, again, go to www.adpicampus.com, sign up for free. Go in there and check out the events and just make comments. Go in and make a comment and say like, hey, when's the next cohort starting? And we'll get you hooked up. It's that simple. And we'll get you on the wait list and where you need to be. So again, if you guys are interested in taking your real estate game to the next level, seriously consider joining one of ADPI's highly coveted and exclusive cohorts, either for residential or commercial. They're all awesome, and people are getting fantastic results. So hope to see you in one of those cohorts. And until then, we shall get back to the show.
And you mentioned about how you had to, you know, provide lower rent to get people in there. That was one thing about the rent relief programs, you know, or Section 8, where you still can play. They still will pay you market rent. Mm-hmm. So that was really awesome so that we did not have to suffer in cash flow. And unfortunately, when it comes to garnishments, that, you know, there's a lot of landlords out there that are owed money. Even I'm owed, you know, like $6,900 right now. Unfortunately, you won't be able to recoup all that money. But at least during crises like that, try to do as much damage control as possible. And I don't want that to scare people, because I hope, you know, COVID's a once in a lifetime situation, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's never happened in my lifetime so far, you know, outside of maybe if you want to talk about 08, you know, the 08 housing bubble. But it's not something that I would say that, hey, this don't get into real estate investing. Real estate investing is awesome. It's just like life, things come up and you have to adapt in order to survive or come out even stronger.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. All right, man. Now we're going to get to a portion of the show here, which I've been super excited about since the first time we talked. I want you to tell me about this Burr B&B. Am I saying that right?
I was saying Burr and B.
Yeah. I knew I was saying it wrong. Okay. So
I think the first time I heard it was Burr B&B, but I was like, oh, it sounds better Burr and B.
Burr and B. Yeah, I like Burr and B better. But for listeners of the show and you know, just general real estate investors, the Burr method, pretty much popularized by Brandon Turner and David Green at Bigger Pockets, the Burr method, you know, you buy the property, you rehab it, you rent it, you refinance and you repeat, right? Like, so you're buying a property for undervalue, you're making it nice, forcing appreciation, you're putting a tenant in there that pays rent, and then you're going and refinancing and pulling whatever cash you can out to go and buy another one. It's a great way to scale. But this has a little twist on it, and I want you to tell me about that twist. So tell me about the deal. Let's run through the numbers and let's run through this specific exit strategy, because it's pretty cool and it's different. I want
to
hear about it.
So remember I said my second deal, the idea was not to stay in that deal forever. It was to eventually cash out.
The duplex.
Yes, the duplex. Call it a gamble. But from my market analysis, I had saw in that particular zip code that the property value was going to go up or was projected to go up. And crazy enough, you know, COVID properties still went up in value pretty well. Mm-hmm. So came out of that with a $54,000 profit. I did a 1031 exchange, which for those that don't know, 1031 exchange, and that's great, 54K within 18 months of having a home too. So did 1031 exchange. For those that don't know about 1031, pretty much you can take the profits without paying taxes on it, put it in an escrow, and you have to buy a property that's equal to value or more. If you do not, you can boot the rest of the money left over, which has to get taxed. I don't think a lot of people know about that. So don't stress your mind trying to find a deal that's the exact same or higher. You can find a deal that's a little lower that may cash flow better, which that is a thing because that's exactly what I did. And then you can boot the rest. Or you could just find multiple properties in that 50. In my case, my 54K, I can buy two properties to fill that 54,000, fulfill that 54,000, so I don't have to pay taxes as well.
Yeah, the 1031 exchange is super clutch. If you want more information on that, definitely reach out to a professional tax advisor, and they'll walk you through. But it involves some, you know, custodians and you know, there's some rules and everything. But getting smart on it is super powerful, because literally avoiding those capital gains taxes is huge, especially short term capital gains, because you're talking 18 months.
Yeah,
you probably get nailed with short term gains instead of long term gains. So, yeah, that was a smart move.
Yes. And so that's one of my key points, is that you definitely want to have a plan when it comes to investing. Don't just kind of, oh, just looking for the next great deal. What is kind of your trajectory? And I'll talk more about that later, but was looking for a property that was going to cash flow better, but I wanted something that was a bit unique, from what I already had. And I wasn't married to multifamily. So, and I wanted to also get in a better grade of neighborhood. So I found like a B neighborhood in Chesapeake. Bought the home for 128, and ARV is about 230.
Wow.
So pretty good deal in that area. It's a corner
but
of
needed some work.
Oh yeah. So it's like a 1950s, 1960s neighborhood that is having all the homes now being either turned, you know, knocked down and built up new, or just renovating them out. So it's a quiet neighborhood, very nice, very safe. It just needs a remodel. That's all it needs. So I ran into a home that has another standalone garage. So there's a single family home, three bedroom, 900 square foot, mm-hmm. and a 400 square foot standalone garage. So not as big as that triplex, but same concept. Main house, standalone garage. So the idea was to convert the standalone garage into a private room studio and Airbnb it, and leave the single family home to cash flow, which 128, I needed about 40 grand to put down, because there's some plumbing that I'll explain later that kind of raised that price up. So that puts me at 40. That puts me at 168.
168, 170,
yeah. Yeah, we'll say 170 with an ARV of 230. So that still gives me 60 grand left in equity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did some research. I actually interviewed a lady named Rachel on my podcast, and she told me about this website called AirDNA, mm-hmm. AirDNA.com. And that's where I looked
I think
up.
I think it's .co, but yeah.
Yes, it is .co, actually.
.co or something like that.
Yep, it is. So I got curious and was like, okay, well, how much can I, you know, obviously charge, do my market analysis on the private room. And so I got curious, well, how much can I charge per day for the house? Because I intended to just do long-term rental because it was going to cash flow great, you know, from all my underwriting that I've done. And then I saw that I could charge about $210 a night if I wanted to.
Just for the house or for both?
Just for the house. $75 okay. for the studio, the garage, yeah. and $210 a night for the main house. Now, I was only going to be able to rent, due to the rent comparison in that market, I was only going to be able to rent it for about $1,400 with a mortgage of about $850. So mm-hmm. it's okay. You know, I'll be fine. I'll manage it myself too, so I don't have to really worry about any property management. And it's just got Bird, so it's not going to be much maintenance I'm putting aside for it.
Right. You just did kind of a full rehab on it.
Yeah, so maybe I'm just putting money aside for vacancy and CapEx, and that's it. Other than that, there's another $200 I don't really have to worry about. So, made sense with long-term rental. But I looked at short-term, I was like, wow, I could really make a lot of money from this. And so, what I looked at a deal that could make me $25,000 a year, now it looks like I can make about $52,000.
Wow.
Because now I'm doing, and I'm not doing anything different as far as what I would originally wanted to do as far as renovations. I'm just maximizing the profits in the area. So the part that's going to be is complicated because it's an older home. It's a 1950s home. So is the plumbing, because there obviously is no water line going towards the garage, and there's no water line going towards the laundry room that I'm trying to install as well. But every people that do Airbnbs, you know, usually there's a laundry room. And obviously the standalone garage needs to have its own water line for its own mini kitchen. So that does create some complications, but I've dealt with that before. Thanks to having that triplex, it's actually 110 years old. So I've kind of dealt with that before as far as changing the plumbing.
These ancient properties.
Yeah, yeah. It's this colonial Virginia. You know, it's definitely a lot of homes that are 50s on back. And now you see a transition in some parts of America where the open, you know, floor plan is the end, but it's still a home from the 60s or 50s. So you just knock down the wall and have to change some things, PVC pipe and stuff like that. So the cool thing that the reason why I kind of like this concept or the Burr and B process is because what I did was I didn't use hard money to get this property on my own, not all of my own cash. I used a conventional loan where I only have to put 15% down. And so I kind of call it a burr on training wheels, or you called it training wheels.
I think when we first talked, the burr on training, because you're only putting a little, you know, not as much typically as you would put down. That's pretty cool. Did you have to pay PMI on that or mortgage insurance?
Yes. So you have to PMI, and then also the cool thing I like about it is you have to pay the contractor in increments. And that's what allows you to, you know, that's a safeguard for you. So they get paid the initial deposit. Hey, go out and get the materials and whatever labor you need to do. And then let's say after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they get inspected on their work. They will not get paid again until the loan company reviews it, make sure it's good to go. And now you can move forward. So this safeguards you. If this is your first big renovation, this safeguards you from getting screwed in any particular way, or it's an education process as well. I look at this as just education process, especially if you have a contractor and a loan officer that's willing to kind of be a teacher to you. So that way, when you go out there and do a hard money flip or burr, you have a clear understanding how the process is supposed to work, because I can't rinse my money on this burr quickly. I got to wait 6 months to do it, which is fine with me.
Because you need the seasoning.
Yeah, which is fine because it's a short-term rental. I'll make my money, whatever I had, you know, the 15% I had put down, I'll make that money back and then move on. But this is, I would say, great to do it like this so that when you move on and get your money back in however way you do, now go ahead and do a hard money lend with a contractor and turn the house around in 4 weeks and rinse that money out and repeat. Yeah.
No, I love the use of a rehab loan is really powerful. So if you're looking for, you know, to get into whether it's a flip or you're getting into, you know, something like this, a burr, hard money is great. Rehab loans are great. And, you know, hard money kind of puts more of the onus on you because you're going to be paying the contractors most likely. Your hard money lender is not going to be like, you know, whatever. They're just going to be like, pay me my 12% and 2 points. But you might get better terms from a small community bank who's offering a specialized product like Anthony's talking about, you know, on a rehab loan or a construction loan where they're paying it out in increments, protecting you. I love that. Because when you're going through your first rehab, man, or even a larger rehab, there's like a lot of stuff that comes up. And it's like, and most of the time, unless you're a contractor, you don't know what in the hell they are talking about. I mean, I don't swing hammers. I manage the people who do. And yeah, we just went through a big rehab recently and turned out beautiful, but I didn't even look at the property. I haven't even been down there in years, but I just got the pictures. I got the videos. I got the whole thing, everything done. You know, thank God for cell phones and Zoom and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it worked out, but or FaceTime or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it is super creative, and I love the Airbnb aspect because I think you mentioned, you know, the garage is going to go for $75 a night. The house could go for $210 a night. So let's call it $300 a night total. Mm-hmm. You know, let's round up a little bit. I mean, that's incredible. Just looking at the numbers here, what with your construction loan and everything, what is your mortgage on that property?
So when I did the math, my mortgage was going to be about $850.
That's with the construction loan added on, with the $40,000 mm-hmm. construction loan, the whole thing added on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so $850 a month, and that includes obviously your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And then you go in and, I mean, golly, renting it for $300 a night if you get both of these things occupied. And granted, that's a stretch, but guys, that's 3 days out of the month. That's insane. That's 10% occupancy. Do you know what the average short-term rental occupancy is for?
Yes.
I mean, AirDNA, I'll tell you that. Yeah, what is that?
Yes. So in this area, I can get about 20 days, average 20 days a month out of the 12 months of the year.
So you're talking 60 to 70% occupancy
yes.
out of a month. So even on a low end, you're doing $300, you know, times 20. I mean,
$6,000.
That's $6,000 a month in cash. Yes. I'm sorry. $6,000
yeah,
gross. but then, yeah, okay, great. Big deal. You're still, you know, you're still probably looking at $3,500, $4,000 a month in cash flow.
Yeah, because I got
when everything shakes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible, incredible thing. So at the end of the day, it's all about exit strategies, right? So, you know, how much did you put into this? You said about, it was like 40,000 in the beginning on the
40,000. So cool thing about this renovation loan, I only have to put 50% down. So even though 40 grand of construction work needs to get done and, you know, it's bought for 128, I only need to do 15% of what the, of a 160 pretty much, or 170. I only need to do 15% of that, which comes out of my 1031 exchange. So it's really, no money's really coming out of my pocket at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So for you know, 15% of your 170,000. I mean, yeah, it's yeah. So, man, that's crazy, man. That's like only 20 grand, $25,000.
I did a math on that real quick.
So
25 grand.
Yeah, 25 grand. So, you know, golly, if you're cash flowing $3,000 a month from a short term rental, I mean, shoot, man, that's less than 12 months. That's like 8 months. You're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so 8 months doing that, you're good to go. You've earned your principal back. The rest is gravy, and you move on to the next property. That is an incredible strategy, and it's just one exit strategy. You could, you know, if the government says, "Oh no, you can't do this anymore, Anthony. Yeah, you can't do short-term rentals." Everyone freaks out. No, make an executive rental. Make it a long, more than 30 days, and cater and market to a different audience. Oh no, the government said you can't do that either. All right, make it a long-term rental. You're going to cash flow either way because you're smart and you bought right first. And
yeah, you buy, yeah, your profit's on the buy.
Yeah. I'm loving the comments on Facebook, guys. So if you're listening to the podcast, you know, as you normally listen to it, we do some of these live, and there's some live comments on the Facebook. Shout out to Mike. It says he's loving the Burr and B. And then I think your wife says renovation loans and 1031 make the wifey happy.
hey, shout out to Mike Cavagioni. That's my bro right there.
Heck yeah. So guys, use Facebook Live, ask questions. I think we covered Mike's question already in some pain points during the pandemic, but yeah, it was it's really cool kind of integrating these systems and now being able to push this stuff live to the group where we're able to interact and interact with the podcast guests. And Brian Briscoe said, what up? So yeah, Brian's my boy. He just separated from, retired from the Marine Corps, and now is a co-owner of Four Oaks Capital and does some really cool stuff.
Awesome.
Used to be, having any Panda Express lately. No, I'm not having any Panda lately. I'm watching my girlish figure, Brian. So we used to meet at the Pentagon and have some lunch, but he moved away from me. Now he lives in Utah or Idaho or somewhere really beautiful.
those are beautiful places, actually.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Anthony, incredible story. I love the energy, but unfortunately we are running a bit short on time. So I'm going to kick this right into the bonus round. You ready? Same four questions?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right. Same four questions we ask each and every one of our guests, and you're guest number 218. So let's get into it. Question number one, what book or software has really helped you crush it lately?
I would say Cashflow Quadrant.
Yeah, I love that
and
book.
That's a book that I've had to actually read twice because I think I read it and I was like, that didn't really hit me like I needed it to. And then I read it again, actually, when I was on deployment. And I needed to reread it because I wanted to invest so bad. But I also, in the book, Robert Kiyosaki talks about increasing your business, increasing your actual cash flow so that you could be a better investor. And so that's where Rich Dad and Mine kind of came from, in order to, okay, create some more cash flow, different streams of income so you could be a better investor. Because we have all these ideas on what would we do with $1 million? Like, somebody gave you $2 million, you know what you would do with it. It's just getting
put it on red.
It's just getting that $2 million. So that book is definitely helpful. It's actually, I like that book more than I like Rich Dad Poor Dad, to be honest.
I think I agree with that. I definitely agree with that, because I think it's more actionable, you know, things that you can do for your business in that book versus Rich Dad Poor Dad, which is more storytelling and conceptual. Both are important.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So like always, if you're looking to get that book, Cashflow Quadrant, there's going to be a link in the show notes. Just scroll down, tap that link and get that book. Question number two for you, who is your biggest hero and why?
My grandfather. You're actually the first person to even ask me that, but yeah, it's my grandfather. He was a doctor. He became a doctor in the 70s, did Vietnam in the 60s. And he showed me, despite a lot of the obviously adversities going on in the 60s and 70s for African Americans, mm-hmm. he showed me that if you stay consistent, and you don't have to be the smartest person, but if you stay consistent, you will achieve the things that you want to achieve. So yeah. I stay true to that in my own life. You know, anybody that has done, you know, active duty Navy or just Navy period in order to be a chief, there is a lot of consistency, there's a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of adversity. So I definitely have taken that from him.
I love that. Yeah, that's so true. And it whenever you're trying something new and you're going to fail. Like, you're going to suck at it. I always tell people, like, you try something new, whether that's playing a new sport, trying a new business, doing it, you're going to totally suck at it. But that's okay. You know, you got to stay consistent. Keep hammering down, keep taking tiny little action steps each and every day, and it will shake out for you. And the opportunities will come and you will capitalize, but it takes time. So don't get discouraged. Great advice. Question number three, what do you like to do for fun, Anthony?
Family time. We have movie night on Fridays, and my wife and I, we try to date. I like the family time. Personally, I do football fantasy, basketball fantasy. So it's too late for this year, but anybody that want to play me next year, just let me know. And then
I'm always so late to the party on that. Like, it's like the day before, you know, the football starts, and I'm like, hey, who's doing a fantasy team?
Yeah, I got one I've been playing with like 3 weeks forever. Ago. Yeah, exactly. So pro tip, don't do the draft until after preseason is over with. You'll have a bunch of injuries. But that's what I do for fun.
Nice, man. Nice, nice. All right, man. Last question. This is the big one for folks that are just getting started, and maybe they're inspired by your Burr and Bee story, or just getting started as a junior enlisted sailor. What are some three nuggets that you can share with those folks to kind of help them get underway, as the Navy says?
It's not a race. So I don't want people to. I know we see a lot of podcasts of people that have, you know, 200 units, did a syndication, you know, making millions of dollars. Do it in the pace that's appropriate for you. And I don't want anybody to feel like they have to rush to where they end up rushing to failure. So that would be like my first tip. Do it at your own pace. My second tip would be, identify what is your real estate goal. If that means you have to hone it down to a niche where, like, I'm a buy and hold, maybe you're a flipper, maybe you're a wholesaler. maybe you're a BRRRR, you know, you're a BRRRR type of individual. The reason why I say identify what your goal is because I don't want, you know, I don't want people to just go out there and just get a deal and then you don't have any exit strategies or plan. I went into that duplex knowing that I was going to let it appraise for a higher value, cash out for something in a better neighborhood that would allow me to not be so hands-on and actually have a better landlord experience. So just think about that. You write it out, put it on a dry erase board on what you want to do, how you want to, do you want to do a Monopoly style and get five units and then sell them all and then get a bigger property, you know, a commercial property. So definitely go into that, having that plan. And then the third one is look for easy entry points. And this is, I would say, for people that, you know, the E4s, the E5s, you know, or people that don't have as much cash available, easy entry points, VA loan, the conventional 15% loan, the FHA loan. There's a lot of things you could do with that. You can house hack pretty much all those three type of financing ideas that I just said to where you live in one unit and you rent out the others. You can even do seller financing as well. There's not, don't just stick yourself or pigeonhole yourself into one type of financing that you probably have been fed through a bunch of commercials or what maybe a loan officer may give you initially. Find a loan officer that's going to be willing to sit down with you and provide different creative ways to finance a property. There's so many. You'd be so shocked at how people are got into a deal and they were like, hey, I only had like 10 grand, you know, but
yeah, no. And that's, I think you touched on a really, really, really important member of the team, which is your loan officer. Yes. People kind of overlook that, you know, because there's some loan officers out there who are kind of like order takers, you know, they're like, okay, what's your name? Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to, you know, put this into the file and someone will reach out to you. Like that's usually kind of the big bank kind of the way to do things. But, you know, believe it or not, if you go back, I think a couple episodes, maybe 2-3 episodes, I interviewed Spencer Thomas, who is the head of ADPI's financial services division. And we work and have our own mortgage branch. If you didn't know that, ADPI is our own mortgage branch. And all of our loan officers, guess what? Are military real estate investors. And they specifically work with and work with you to find those creative solutions. So if you just want to have a conversation and get connected and you're listening to this right now, all you have to do, go on your phone, text the word DEAL, DEAL to 33777. And we'll get you connected with a loan officer right away and just have a conversation. You know, I always tell people, shop around. You know, it's like shopping for car insurance, you know, have the 15-minute conversation. Yes. You get a good vibe, shop around and see what works. You know, best case scenario, you get a great rate, a great loan and have a great experience. Worst case scenario, you have a good conversation with another investor who gets it, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, it's typically, you know, I like to say it's kind of like a win-win there, but Anthony, that is some really, really, really critical advice for folks getting started. Use those programs that are available and just, you know, and just educate yourself and go, you know, Mark Jancich, the CEO of ADPI, he's instilled this principle into me, inch wide, mile deep. And that just means focus into your niche, you know, inch wide on that niche and dig really, really deep into it and understand it, master it before you move on to another thing. And, you know, that's helping me in my personal business and just everything. So love that you kind of share that same philosophy. Well, man, this has been awesome. Where can folks get in touch with you, Anthony?
You can email me at richstateofmind1@gmail.com, or you can subscribe to richstateofmind.com with your email address. And that's how you can stay and, you know, pretty much stay in tune with us, with whatever podcast episode we come out with or content. And you can also see me featured on other podcasts as well to see the other things that we discuss. So that's how you can contact
and
me.
Guys, subscribe to his podcast. You're listening to this podcast, listen to Rich State of Mind. It's on Apple, on Spotify, and all those things.
All major platforms. Yep.
All major platforms. And on our website. Yeah, and on the website. So Rich State of Mind, super easy. Find that. We're going to put a link to that in the show notes for you, Anthony, and have a direct link right to your podcast because I think that's really awesome. I love working with other people who have podcasts. They understand the struggle.
yeah.
But man, this has been awesome. Incredible show. And thanks for all y'all tuning in and watching it live. It's, you know, some folks are commenting live now that they're going to be in touch with you. So that's what it's about.
Oh, yeah. Adrian Young. I think that's who I saw. Yeah. I used to serve with him.
Right on. Heck yeah. Heck yeah. All right, man. Well, yeah, it's been a pleasure. And we will, you know, we might have to have you on in the future sometime.
That'd be awesome. I would love it.
All right, dude. I will talk to you later.
Later.
Another amazing episode in the books. Thanks so much to our special guest. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to tap the subscribe button now to make sure you don't miss an episode. Or head over to our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to grab all of our free resources and discover how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today.